Tensions are escalating in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, where Rwandan-backed M23 rebels are battling government forces for control of the strategic city of Goma. Reports indicate thousands of Rwandan troops may have entered the region, heightening fears of a broader regional conflict. With South Africa playing a key role in African peacekeeping efforts and President Cyril Ramaphosa already engaging in diplomatic talks with Rwanda's Paul Kagame, what influence can Pretoria bring to the table? And what does this crisis mean for regional stability, trade, and South Africa's role in African diplomacy? Bloomberg reporters Simon Marks and Michael Kavana, who's covered the region for 20 years, join Jennifer Sabasaja to explain who the key players in the conflict are, what chance there is for a ceasefire, and the risk this could spread into a wider regional conflict. Let's listen in.
Rwandan-backed rebel fighters are battling the Congolese army for control over the key city of Goma. African leaders have called for negotiations between Rwanda and the DRC after reports of thousands of Rwandan troops entering the city alongside M23 rebel fighters.
We do not see, from where I sit, a possibility of a military solution to the challenges that faced Eastern DRC. It was, it is, and I'm sure it will continue to be the case that engagement, dialogue, consultations is the only viable way out of the situation in DRC.
The Rwandan president again denied this was a Rwandan offensive.
M23 are not Rwandans, please.
On today's episode of the Next Africa podcast, we'll ask what's behind this latest round of fighting in this three-decade-long conflict and what the repercussions could be if a ceasefire isn't forthcoming. I'm Jennifer Zabasaja, and this is the Next Africa podcast, bringing you one story each week from the continent driving the future of global growth with the context only Bloomberg can provide. Joining us this week are Bloomberg reporters Simon Marks and also Michael Kavanaugh, who have both reported extensively throughout the region. Guys, thanks so much for being here. There's so much to discuss. This is obviously a fast-moving situation, but Simon, maybe you can start us off by giving us a bit of context about who the people are that are involved in this fighting that we should be paying close attention to.
So this is a long-running conflict that's been going on for many years in eastern Congo. And it's ostensibly between two groups. It's the Congolese army and also the M23 rebel group, which is largely drawn from Congolese communities of Rwandan origin. It's a very well-organized rebel group that UN experts and many observers of what's happening in eastern DRC say are backed heavily by the Rwandan state. Why Rwanda? Well, that's because Rwanda are keen to see the Congolese of Tutsi origin protected and their rights protected. They've had a long-standing belief that Tutsis in this region have been discriminated against and their rights have not been upheld. This is really the origin of this years-long conflict that now exploded into the streets of Goma, where M23 have come in and seized large portions of the city.
And from my understanding, much of M23 is made up of those with Tutsi origin. Michael, is that fair to say?
It's fair to say. You know, the Tutsis and Hutus are found in a lot of the countries around the region, specifically in Rwanda, of course, but they're also in Uganda and Burundi, in particular in Burundi, and then in Eastern Congo as well. And throughout history, there have been movements of this population throughout the region for various reasons, colonial reasons, economic reasons, and reasons of violence, because there has been tension over the years between the two communities, the Hutus and the Tutsis. And, you know, the most famous one, of course, for us in our lifetimes, or many of our lifetimes, the 1994 Rwandan genocide, which killed probably, you know, between 800,000 and a million, mostly Tutsis, but also moderate Hutus during that time. And that's really the impetus for the current conflict all these years later, because after the genocide, Rwandan, mainly Tutsi-led rebel movement, pushed the Hutu movement out, that had the government that had killed all the Tutsis in Rwanda, pushed them into Congo, And then a war broke out in Congo. The Congolese government was overthrown. But we've seen sort of the embers of this war still burning and the embers of the genocide still burning in eastern Congo and throughout the country ever since.
And you mentioned, of course, this has been going on for several decades. Maybe you can contextualize what the current conflict, though, is over. Is it still dating back to a lot of these tribal issues that we saw? And why is it concentrated in Goma, Michael?
It's still related in part to what happened all the way back then. These communities still exist, and there is a rebel group known as the FDLR, the Democratic Forces for the Liberation of Rwanda, whose origins are found in the perpetrators of the genocide, though there are probably almost no people who've perpetrated genocide still among this group. The current Rwandan government thinks that they promote this genocidal ideology, and they believe they're an existential threat to the country. They believe that genocidal ideology is a threat to Rwanda entirely, and they need to completely stamp it out. At the same time, Eastern Congo is a place where rebel groups thrive. There are probably more than 100 that are there. It's a chaotic place. There are rebels that oppose the governments of Uganda, of Rwanda, of Burundi. It's a place where there are many small rebel groups that, you know, protect local communities. There are ethnic issues, there are land issues, and of course there are economic issues as well, because Eastern Congo is extremely rich in natural resources. The land is fertile, the land is full of minerals. It's the most important place in the world for a mineral, an ore called coltan, which is in just about all of your mobile phones and all of your laptops. And there's tin ore, there's gold. And especially in the last few years, with the rise in the price of gold and some of the other minerals located there, we're seeing a real uptake in conflict linked to the exploitation of minerals, which are then smuggled through neighboring countries, enriching armed groups, enriching certain communities, enriching Congo's neighbors, but not enriching the Congolese. And so this has become a massive flashpoint between local communities and between the regional nations there, who are all benefiting in some way from Eastern Congo's resources, but it's resulting in pretty serious conflict. And that ends up in Goma. Goma is really the focal point because it's the main trading hub. It's right on the border with Rwanda, near lakes. It's near lots of different ways where you can sort of transport various natural resources to both sides. And so Goma has become the focal point. It's also where the UN is based and where most NGOs are based.
And we've heard President Kagame of Rwanda deny that Rwanda has any involvement. Is he still standing by that right now, Simon? I mean, what are we hearing from Rwanda, especially about this current conflict? Because it is getting international attention.
Yeah, so President Paul Kagame of Rwanda has been quite coy about this issue for a long time. For many years, he outright denied any involvement or links to the M23 rebel group. But in recent years, UN experts have done a lot of probing on this issue and have found lots of material evidence of Rwandan troops based inside Congo and also weapons acquired by the Rwandan army also appearing on the battlefield. So it's become very hard for Paul Kagame to continue with this outright denial. And I think more recently, it's fair to say he's become, let's say, a bit more philosophical about Rwanda's position on this. He often talks about the importance of protecting Congolese communities of Tutsi origin in the country. He often talks about the need to eradicate the FDLR group, which Michael just mentioned. So it's clear Rwanda has a very strong ideological stance in this conflict. But there are many who think that it goes way beyond that. It's also a quest for ownership of the land, of the economic riches in this area that Rwanda benefits from.
Michael, you, from my understanding, you used to live in the DRC. You've spent a lot of time there. How does this reaction compare to what you guys have seen in the past?
The last time that the M23 took Goma was in 2012. There was an enormous international reaction, an enormous amount of pressure on Rwanda, on the M23. Eventually, an intervention brigade was formed by the United Nations, which went and fought the M23 and destroyed them, at least temporarily. This time, we're not seeing yet the same amount of pressure. We're not seeing the same level of sanctions, the same level of attention. And there's no doubt that the moment when this invasion of Goma is happening is is a particularly interesting moment because there's a change of administration in the United States. The U.S. has been the most outspoken about Rwanda's influence on the M23 and its participation in this conflict. And there's also a change, of course, at the African Union as well in terms of the leadership. So, you know, this is a moment where I think there's a lot of flux in the international community and people aren't quite sure what to do to get Rwanda to change its policy towards the M23, nor to figure out how to bolster the Congolese army in a way that would allow them to fight back from the M23 advance. So it's a very confused and tenuous situation, and countries are starting to talk about sanctions, starting to talk about other ways, other levers of pressuring Rwanda. But Rwanda has already gone through this before. The M23 have gone through this before. And so they certainly, if they're willing to take Goma again, they're ready to face those similar kind of consequences. And so I think that's the reason why people are so concerned that actually the end game might be a kind of broader war and more extensive occupation of Eastern Congo. Now, that's a pretty extreme thing to say. We don't know that that's what's going to happen, but this is what various actors and experts are warning about.
Are there other players or leaders on the continent who could make a difference, though? Because we've heard South African President Ramaphosa has called President Kagame. Would that move the needle potentially?
So I think in terms of the continent's ability to rein in this, I mean, we've seen the East Africa community today, as we speak, are holding talks in Nairobi. And the African Union has a summit next month in Addis, where they have scheduled a meeting, a high-level meeting about this crisis. And Angola has had a very sort of key role in mediating this crisis with its president, João Lourenço. And he will be taking over the presidency of the African Union. So I think these are the countries that you have to watch for. And you can probably see a scenario. I know a lot of European countries are already looking at trying to back a sort of AU-led peace initiative led by the Angolans on this. Whether it gains any steam, it's hard to say, because the longer a ceasefire isn't agreed to, the more the potential for this thing to spiral.
Could UN peacekeepers potentially make a difference? They've been there throughout these years.
The MONUSCO peacekeeping force in eastern Congo has been pretty useless, to be honest, in containing this war. It's highly unpopular. It's not seen as a unit that engages when violence actually comes about. It's struggled to protect communities. And because of that, actually, they've had a steady process of drawing down their troops from the region, not increasing them. In recent days, we've seen the Blue Helmets pull back and not really get too involved in this fight, albeit some of them have lost their lives.
Michael?
And the UN is there, of course, to back up the Congolese army, and that's become more and more true over the years, that if the Congolese army is not fighting, then the UN is not going to go out of their way to attack the rebel groups or push them back. But they do provide still really important logistics, you know, healthcare, medicine. They provide important places. You know, when these conflicts kick off, like we're seeing right now, where does everyone go? The UN bases. The UN bases are full right now. They're full. They're taking mortar fire. They're taking bullets, but they're surrendered troops, surrendered militia, you know, civilians, human rights defenders, Congolese government officials. The UN has all been working to evacuate them, treat them. So they still play a very essential and important role in the region. They're just not like a hot army.
The risk for Paul Kagame in backing the M23 arguably is a lot less today than what it was 10, 12 years ago, the last time the M23 stormed into Goma. And that's because Rwanda has a much bigger role to play on the continent, but also internationally with its relationships with governments across the globe. And it does this by providing large numbers of peacekeepers to various contingencies of the UN across Africa. It has its soldiers in the Central African Republic, where it's supporting the government on a bilateral basis. And it's helping a lot in Mozambique to protect French LNG assets that Total are interested in. And so in general, I think a lot of people view Rwanda as a bit of a post-genocidal success story. But when you go to the country, that's what people see first and foremost. And this has won Kagame quite a lot of accolades.
So then, considering all of this, you guys, before we wrap up, What will determine what happens next? I mean, Michael, you were laying out how this is a changing world order, right? We have a new U.S. administration. Different leaders have come into power on the continent. What's determining the outlook?
The Congolese believe that the international community needs to intervene. They've asked for two emergency sessions of the Security Council to ask for sanctions, to ask for sanctions against Rwandan officials, political and military. They've asked for embargoes on the sale of Rwandan minerals and the purchase of weapons. But at the moment, this is still falling on deaf ears. So if you're from the Congolese point of view, they really need international pressure on Rwanda. It's just not clear that that pressure is being mobilized right now. Without that kind of pressure, Rwanda seems to be happy to carry on. And again, because they feel like they have security risks, existential security risks, they're protecting their borders, they're protecting their country. They have seen a genocide, they have seen the effects of extreme violence as it spreads, and they're sick of the chaos on the border in eastern Congo. And so, you know, they feel they're justified in what they're doing right now because of that.
The big question is, can you get Felix Tshisekedi and Paul Kagame in a room together? And it's been a very long time since that's happened. There are attempts to, and I think Ruto has attempted to do that even today in Nairobi, but it's not happened. So the longer this goes on, the higher the risk of what people call, you know, a regional conflict could occur. So, you know, the head of M23's political wing, Corneille Nangaa, he's out there saying that he wants to push on even beyond Goma. So he's being very vocally bullish. This is one to watch in terms of whether this escalates way beyond the city of Goma.
That was Simon Marks and Michael Cavanna from our partners at Bloomberg, breaking down the escalating crisis in the DRC and its broader implications for Africa. And I'm Kerry Lanigan from BizNews.